Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us.
Our guests today are Luna Hammond and Shannon Knight, the hosts of the Tarot Diagnosis Podcast, a weekly podcast that highlights the intersection of tarot and psychology. Luna is a psychotherapist and private coach in Baltimore, Maryland, who specializes in working with people who are striving to make meaningful and lasting changes in their lives. Shannon is a psychotherapist and coach with a private practice in Tampa, Florida, soon to be Arizona, where she works with individuals and couples looking to live, feel, communicate, and connect authentically with themselves and those around them. On the Tarot Diagnosis Podcast and within their private membership community, The Symposium, Luna and Shannon explore, learn, and express curiosity about the human experience, while using tarot to facilitate a journey towards deeper understanding, growth, and healing. Luna and Shannon, thank you so much for being here with me on In Search of Tarot. I would love to dive in by first just learning a little bit more about how you met each other. I'm really curious to hear how your paths crossed. Luna, maybe do you want to start?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked me because I was hoping I got to tell this story because I enjoy telling it. Shannon and I met in graduate school, and I have several memories of meeting her very early on. I feel like I have a memory, and it might be slightly constructed, but who knows, of meeting her in the interview and then being in our very first class together. And the way I like to talk about it is I would come into class and I was very, you know, like excited about being there. And I would sit in the very first row and like raise my hand all the time. And then I started getting used to the voices behind me. And there was this one voice of this really smart person who was sitting like farther back. And I started turning around being like, who is that? Who's saying all that smart stuff? And that's how I got to know Shannon.
Shannon, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, I remember Luna always sitting up front too, and I was always so nervous, and I struggled with imposter syndrome. So I was like, I'm just going to hang out in the back. And I remember always thinking, if Luna says something that mimics what I was thinking about this, then I'm going to feel really good that day. But also Luna was just someone who felt so safe, and she was someone I always wanted to be around. And yeah, we met in the interview in grad school and had several classes together, and just ended up staying in touch. And, you know, I was thinking, I was like, oh my God, it's been 10 years at this point. I don't know if you realize that.
No, I hadn't realized that.
But we just, you know, maintained contact, and we were each other's accountability partners for a while because we were both building our private practices, and we knew we wanted to work together at some point. We just weren't sure in what capacity. And just the right time and the right topic eventually came up, and here we are.
And how did tarot come into both of your lives? Were you already working with tarot when you met, or did that come later?
Tarot came into our lives separately. For me, actually, even when I was in grad school, I wasn't using tarot. It came later, like soon after I graduated and was starting my practice, I was actually looking sort of for more counsel because I was having a hard time connecting with therapists because I had just been through a training. And when I would talk to a therapist, I was like, I see what you're doing there. So I was seeking other places of counsel, and I was working with somebody who referred to herself as an intuitive, and she suggested that maybe I would want to work with tarot. And so I started to, and now that's been, I've lost track of how many years, 7 or 8 years at this point.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that you mentioned, Shannon, before you answer, you just reminded me. So I've been in therapy with different therapists, you know, throughout my life. And I had an experience in Austin where I had this really amazing female therapist who, and I have a lot of sort of baggage from my father, from my childhood. And we were working through some of that. And I said to her at one point, you know, I have this feeling that we could do this forever, but I kind of think that maybe I should see a male therapist. I think it might bring something different, you know, into the conversation. And so it so happened that her husband was also a therapist. And so, you know, I switched, and his approach was so different and so, like obviously therapeutic, you know, like he would say things like, I can tell you're angry right now. Do you want to just scream? Do you want to just really get mad? And I would really shut down, and he would see it, and he'd be like, you know, I can tell you're shutting down. I was like, well, yes, I can tell that what you're trying to do, you know, I can tell that you're like trying to like therapize me, you know? So like that story you just shared, Luna, kind of reminded me of that. I mean, you know, this is kind of tangential, but like, how do you approach that in your practice? I mean, is that something that is talked about in the therapy world, or like, you know, how is that approached?
Shannon, that meme you sent me the other day is the perfect example. Do you want to talk about it?
Which one? Cause I thought there were two. Are you talking about the spirituality one?
No, it was the one with like the first year therapist, the second year therapist.
Yes, I was literally just thinking about that as Nick was talking. So yeah, there's this hilarious meme that I sent Luna the other day, and it's showing a therapist based on just where they are in their practice. So it's like, you know, first year therapist is very, oh, how does that make you feel? You must be very angry. And then fifth year therapist is like, yeah, like, let's talk about that. That's that, like, come on, like, let's get it out. And then 10 year therapist is like, I've been waiting for this whole, like, you know, I don't want to swear in your podcast, but like, you know, really just kind of like being 100% truly authentic. And I think really just boils down to like your personality and how you approach therapy, and different things work for different people. I think that's why I don't want to get too far ahead, but tarot is so helpful too, because some people just don't respond really well to therapy. And I think tarot can be a form of self-therapy, especially for people who might not have access to quality mental health care.
Yeah. Do you see a mirroring of that in your own tarot practice? Like, do you feel like when you first started to work with the cards that, you know, maybe it was like when you first started to be a therapist, and you do see it developing kind of side by side in that way?
Like, I absolutely do. I think that what a good therapist does is offers a different lens or a different idea. And that's why like tarot is interesting, because like it's random, like shuffle and you get this card and maybe you have a question in your mind. And then you're like, I did not think that this card would be what would come up. And it's a way of shocking your brain into trying to think a different way. So in many ways it mirrors what therapy does. It's just that therapy is not doing it from a random place. It's doing it from a place of kind of building. But I think it gets actually very similar results.
Totally. It's I mean, one is very intentional based on context. And I like that you use the word random. And it's funny because Luna and I were just having this discussion recently, how, and I actually showed her, I was like, hey, I need to pull some cards on this thing, and actively reframed my own thoughts on a situation based on the cards that I pulled. So yeah, definitely. And it's super helpful.
So Shannon, share how tarot came into your life.
So it's interesting. I've always kind of been fascinated by occulty type stuff. And one of the episodes, I think it was our life lessons episode, Luna, where we kind of shared like anecdotes about tarot. I talk about, my best friend and I went to this cute little like bungalow. We used to go there and study all the time when we were in high school. And, we wanted to get our cards read because it was like a cafe / witchy store. And the woman who's reading cards was like, well, how old are you? And obviously we weren't 18, but she was really cool. And she said, well, I can't read your cards, but I'll read your palms. And so we got our palms read, but we really still wanted our cards read. And I told my aunt, who's the family witch. And she was like, nope, come over. And she immediately like reads my cards for me. And tarot's kind of just been in the background probably ever since then. But more regularly and consistently within the last couple of years.
I'm always jealous of people that have like readers or magical people in their family. That's something I did not have. And actually, my co-host that I do bi-weekly episodes with, we do these mini-sode episodes. We were just talking about, she's similar. She had family, actually her father who read tarot. And she was saying, you know, that maybe because of that, because a lot of my work is sort of deconstructing a lot of the like sort of more, you know, Golden Dawn viewpoints that are a little bit more binary or less kind of queer friendly. Sometimes it feels like, she was saying, I feel like maybe I haven't needed to deconstruct as much because I didn't come through just like a teacher kind of teaching me a system. I came through someone actually that, like, you know, I'm very close to, working with the cards and kind of showing me how personal it can be, you know. I mean, how do you feel about that, Shannon, having had that?
Yeah, I think in addition to that, it was also, it took the stigma and taboo away from it as well. So it made me more curious about the cards, which I think the curiosity aspect is really important. Otherwise, if you come into it, you are just reading the cards at face value based on traditional imagery and what, you know, the guidebook might tell you. So I think, yeah, I could totally see how having been exposed to that early on, or having like a trusted member of your family or a friend who was well-versed in using tarot, being able to show you kind of the ins and outs of it, allowed you to think about it differently.
Right, right. So let's dive in a little bit to how you maybe integrate tarot into your therapeutic practice. I run these virtual study groups, and one person that joined has like a coaching, like a life coach or business coaching business. And he was curious, you know, how can I start to use the cards in my coaching practice? So Luna, maybe can you talk a little bit about how you've integrated tarot into your therapeutic practice?
Sure. I mean, although, excuse me, I feel like I hate to disappoint. I think that part of what's interesting about the way we talk about tarot is that we're actually, like, I don't use tarot in my therapy practice unless my client specifically tells me that they pulled a tarot card. If they do, I say, oh, really? What did you pull? And I don't tell anyone that I do this. Like, I told literally one client that I have this podcast and this project. And I really think that that's helpful, both in terms of my practice and in terms of like this tarot work that we're doing on this side, because in my practice, I get to talk to a huge diversity of people, many of whom would be kind of like weirded out by this tarot thing. And I think that that's like actually great, because it gives me more understanding of the human experience. It's something that I'm curious about, that I sort of, Shannon and I talk about this, and I kind of look at it and then put it down. The idea of developing maybe a tarot coaching practice. I'm pretty well versed in coaching and do some coaching on the side too. But it's not something that's bloomed for me yet. And I'm actually very comfortable with that. I think that part of being able to talk about tarot from the perspective as a mental health person versus talking about tarot as a tarot reader is kind of interesting.
Yeah. What about you, Shannon?
Yeah. If a client talks about it, then I explore it with them. I have more clients who do just naturally engage in that type of work. It's never used as a divination tool. You know, that's unethical. It's always just for self-reflection. But, you know, I do have several clients who utilize tarot personally pretty regularly, and they'll journal their pulls and bring them into sessions. And then we interpret them together. Well, they interpret, and then I ask questions based on their interpretations. And it's used more as like just to complement the work we are already doing. You know, you have to walk kind of an interesting line here, because, you know, like Luna points out, you know, some people are weirded out by this still. And I think we enjoy being able to use our clinical experience on the podcast to talk about tarot. And I think we're hopefully kind of normalizing and destigmatizing and removing like the taboo that's present here, and allowing people to see, hey, this can actually be really, really beneficial. And I think as long as you have, you know, explicit permission from the person and they bring it into therapy, you know, then you can say, okay, hey, what did you pull? What does this mean? You know, what's another way to think about this? And we're doing actually some really cool stuff inside the symposium, which is a membership community we just launched, which is kind of like tarot coaching now that I'm thinking about it, Luna, because of the trainings and stuff that we're doing. And having that mental health background has been really beneficial because, you know, I think we're just showing that it isn't something that has to be scary, and it does have a really beneficial therapeutic outcome.
Yeah, this is pointing me towards a question that I wanted to talk about with both of you, which is, you know, if we are approaching the cards in a manner that is not, you know, divinatory, which I do think I want to say that, you know, there is a tradition of that in certain cultures that, you know, for some people it is how they make their livelihood, and that is, you know, important to honor. And I'm not trying to sort of tear that down, but if that's not how we're approaching them, and then we also, like myself, you know, I'm not a licensed therapist, but I do feel like the cards speak more in a, in what you might call like a therapeutic manner or like a self-reflective manner. So like what is the correct way, I guess, then is what I'm asking, to approach the cards, you know, it, for someone who isn't licensed, but doesn't believe it's divinatory, you know, what is kind of the entry point, or what is the lens through which one might kind of approach the cards?
Luna, do you want to go first?
I know, we both are like, oh, that's a good,
it is. It's a good meaty question.
It's very meaty. I think I'll echo what we've said before on one podcast episode is, like, first of all, like, please be protective of yourself as a reader legally. You might want to actually just check what the local laws are, because in the United States, things like this are regulated by state. So just first of all, understanding like what language you're using or what the rules are is probably a good place to begin, just in terms of liability. Mm-hmm. Sorry. But if you're, I think your question is more about like ethically, what would be the appropriate thing to do? And I think that ethically, I guess I want to echo what you said about, like, if you're reading from a spiritual guidance place, it's different. And I totally honor and respect it. And I'm not saying, like, I just think it's different than the idea of a coaching practice. You might want to actually get licensed as a coach or get a certification as a coach so that you get some ethical training around this. But fundamentally, I would just land on the idea of let it be client driven. Yes. The client is the one who has the narrative, and it's the job of the helper to ask questions so that the client gets more clear in their own thinking. And I think that's true for a coach, for a therapist, for a tarot reader, for anybody to say, like, okay, what is this? Like, can I understand this person and help them understand themselves more clearly in a way that's actually helpful?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't have too much more to add other than, you know, the phrase that we commonly say as therapists, and that's, you are the expert on yourself. And I think that holds true in these situations as well, knowing that whoever you're working with, whoever you're pulling cards for, when the, whatever cards come out, they're, the person you're reading for is the expert on those cards. Mm-hmm. And to, you know, just be careful and cautious and curious versus, but see, then there's that line between, you know, divination and fortune telling. I think if you're just pulling cards in terms of guidance and there isn't any sort of spiritual practice happening or divination practice happening, that's where I think the mental health competencies need to be in place. So like letting people know, you know, whatever comes out, you know, we're going to process them together. We're going to ask questions. We're going to kind of dive in and explore each card based on, you know, what it represents for you in your life. And like Luna said, letting it be client driven is really important, and respecting boundaries and keeping open lines of communication throughout the process.
Yeah, it's complicated. It's like a thin gray line, I feel like, you know, and that makes me, brings me to another question, which is, I was re-listening to your episode on the intersection of tarot and psychology this morning in preparation for this interview. And I was thinking about when, so recently I spoke with a friend who actually very adamantly feels that tarot, that she does not want to use tarot therapeutically. And the reason that she really believes in a more systemic approach to tarot, as far as like, you know, correspondences, or that the suits mean certain things, or that the numbers mean certain things, is that she feels like she wants a way to stay accountable. So she wants to make sure that if she's pulling a card, she isn't able to kind of skate around the issue, you know, and just kind of tell herself whatever she wants to hear, but she wants to kind of be pressed up against something, you know. And that kind of echoed something you were sharing in that episode too, which is sort of the same thing, you know, saying that tarot can be a way for us to, you know, dive into layers of ourselves that maybe we didn't know were there, or kind of be brought to a conclusion that we might not have reached otherwise. But it made me want to ask you, you know, when you are in therapy, like traditional therapy, you know, it might take months or years sometimes for someone to really dive into what's really deeply down there, you know, that kind of wants to be explored. And so if you are reading for someone, and a card comes up that you maybe sort of have a relationship with and see as a more challenging card, but you are doing a client focused kind of reading, you know, how much do you push on that? You know, because I was just kind of thinking to myself, a therapist would go very slowly. I mean, at least a good therapist in my experience would kind of go really slow, maybe go around through the back door to kind of get in where they're trying to get. Whereas this approach with tarot, you know, you only have an hour for this reading, and, you know, you're trying to kind of get in, and maybe you're kind of putting it on the other person. Cause that's where I find myself getting more and more stuck as a tarot reader. And I've really been exploring this in my own practice, is I don't want to, project, you know, I don't want to like Five of Swords to come up and to project what I've lived Five of Swords to be, whereas maybe this Five of Swords is coming up for this other person in a totally different way, you know? So I know that's a complicated question, but if either of you have any thoughts on that, I would love to hear.
I mean, that's our training in therapy. That's a big part of our training, is learning how to not bring your own stuff into the therapeutic experience. And, you know, I think, you know, something that Luna and I have always said is, we are therapists who use tarot. We're not tarot readers who are therapists. And I think there's a really like a big difference between the two, and it takes a long time. And it's something that you continually have to check for yourself, is, am I projecting? Am I bringing my own experiences, my own thoughts, my own feelings into this reading or into this session? And, you know, if I am, how can I bring myself back to the present moment and focus on this person? You know, that's why meditation is so difficult, because it's hard to just completely clear your mind. You have to notice what's happening and then kind of redirect yourself. So I think being aware is really important, and making sure that you're doing the work on yourself, so that you know, when you pull, you know, Five of Swords, that whatever you're thinking or feeling, being able to figure out, is that coming from me and my stuff, or am I picking up on something from the person in front of me? And that can be tricky.
I have like 20 things to say, and I'm trying so hard to keep them all in my mind. Well said, Shannon. Yes. I mean, and I think that it is important to point out that is like a huge part of clinical training, is to learn how to check our own countertransference. And like we shouldn't play with that, because like it takes a while. I mean, like we sit with a supervisor who calls us out and is like, yeah, well, do you think that that's what that was, or was that you? I mean, like, that's an experience to be called out on that. I think that maybe a way around it is to just get really competent at learning what the difference is between your own relationship with the cards and what the cards could potentially mean. So one thing that I do as a therapist, but I think that a reader could clearly do, is to offer options. Like sometimes when I'm working with a client, I'll sort of say, okay, well, we could tell the story like this. A different way you could tell the story is like this. Both are sort of true. Both are sort of not true. Which one seems more true to you or is more helpful? Like, that's literally what I'll say. And I think you could do the exact same thing with a card. You could say like Five of Swords, okay, now in my own practice, it means this. However, I know that other people read the card in this way, and it could mean this, or it could mean this. What do you think it means for you? And what I think is powerful about that practice is sometimes I'll tell a story to somebody and say, like, okay, so it could mean this, or it could mean this. And they choose the option that works for them, but they heard me offer the other option. And that almost feels like Ace of Swords to me. Like when we talk about aces, we often talk about the idea of they're sort of like planting seeds in the ground and they don't necessarily bloom, but it's seeds in the ground. So you might offer one interpretation of a card that the person's not able to hear right now. But right if you now, just yes. say it and say, you pick, that idea is planted and they might come to it personally much later.
I love everything you just said. I'm over here like, yes, yes, Luna, keep going. I love your options analogy that you just gave. I literally just used that in a session the other day, but I used a video game reference and I was like, you know, when you're playing like an RPG and you have like option one, option two, or option three, based on like whether you're playing like a good character, or like, you know, a crappy character or whatever. And I was like, okay, here are the three options. it's like as if you're playing a video game, which one do you want to choose? And that will take us down that path. And if you want, we can go back and revisit and play again and go down that path. And I love what you said about right now, like they might not be able to hear it right now. And I think giving the options, like exactly what you're saying, plants a seed, because a year, 2 years, or 6 months, someone might say, oh, I remember so-and-so saying this about the situation. Now I have the mental and emotional capacity to explore that option. Or it might not have resonated during that time, but now it resonates 6 months or 6 years down the road. So I love that. Like the idea of saying, here's this card. It could mean 20 different things. Here are the 20 different options. Which one do you want to grab a hold of and explore right now?
Okay, I'm so excited about everything you just said though. So I'm going to ramble for a second because like that was so fun. I love that you're talking about video games because like what we're dealing with, like what you did was you connected with your client by having like sort of a shared archetype, right? Mm-hmm. Or a shared story. And that's exactly what tarot is like, here's this image. We can all look at the image. And, you know, if we read, we sort of understand what it's supposed to mean or whatever, like, but there's that sort of shared language, whether it's a video game or tarot, that's particularly interesting or like a way of people being able to connect. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but I have had the experience of sitting with clients and having a client said to me, you know, a tarot reader one time told me 5 years ago, like people will tell you this in session, yes. They'll tell you about a reading and they'll do exactly that. They'll say, at the time I thought it meant this, but now I think it means this. And I think that that's incredible.
Yes. Mm. I love when that happens.
Yeah. So cool. I just sit there and nod and say, that's interesting.
So what, like for both of you or maybe for neither of you, what is the element of, magic that comes into play, or is it more coincidence, or I mean, I guess whatever word you want to use, you know, what is the extra layer that happens in tarot, you know, that makes a card show up for someone? Do you think, either of you?
I've been sitting with that word magic. It's so interesting that you say that. I've been sitting with that word magic for a couple months now. And I realize for me personally, magic is the human experience. It is the energy I put out. It is the energy I seek. It is the energy that maybe just kind of makes its way to me without, you know, me putting in any effort. Maybe it's energy that I don't want. And what I do with it is what is magic. And I don't know if that actually answers your question. It's just kind of where I'm at in that process for myself right now. So yeah, I just like that you asked the question.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think I want to clarify that like there's two ways of asking that question. I think that if you're talking to us professionally from the point of view from the podcast and like the work that we do from the tarot diagnosis, we say, if you believe in magic or you believe that it's divination, like work with that, that's great. But we're using, as we have these conversations, it's really from the mental health perspective. Personally, in my own tarot practice, I have a really different way of working on it. To me personally, it does feel like a connection to some form of divine, but I would never put that on somebody or ask them to believe me or believe that experience. But that is the way when I'm pulling for myself, that's the way I pull. And it's interesting because when I'm pulling purely for myself, it's a different experience for when I'm pulling cards, even for the tarot diagnosis. They show up differently.
I see. Totally. I see. I think what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm hearing that the tarot diagnosis is really meant to be like a more therapeutic approach. Like it's kind of maybe more geared toward that community than it even is towards the tarot community. Is that correct?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
I think it's an overlap. I think that, you know, we're speaking, you know, mostly to the tarot community, because like that's the shared language,
right? But
they know what we're talking about, but our perspective, and I think why people mm-hmm. are sort of drawn to us, is that we are offering this different lens of mental health, and mm-hmm. I think that it is a little bit of a different voice.
Yeah. That brings me to a question of like, if you had someone who was on the fence about, you know, I feel like I need some guidance right now. I'm not sure whether I should go into therapy or get a tarot reading, you know, what would make the difference? Or maybe you would say both, you know, but I guess I'm still kind of trying to chip away at why one or the other, and like what the difference is for both of you in those two approaches.
That's a big question. I think it depends on the situation. I mean, if someone's like, you know, if someone's clearly struggling with, you know, some mental health stuff, I mean, we're always going to say go to therapy. I think everybody needs to be in therapy. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that it's a very interesting question. And if you are a licensed therapist, you're under regulations. And I think that it's limited though. And I think it's good that I have an ethical board that I'm responsible for. And I think it's good that there are laws that I have to follow. And I think it's good that I'm accountable to a board. I also think that that's limited, that is like, if you break this rule, it doesn't make you a good therapist. I mean, like there are lots of people who are practicing technically, ethically, but they're not very effective. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, would I like to, I don't know. I mean, like, I think that the tarot or coaching even is more of the Wild West. It's not being mm-hmm. regulated. I personally think one of the best forms of accountability is retention. I feel like I'm a competent therapist because I have people who come back to me over and over and over again for years. I have people who like leave and then come back 3 years later because there's something new in their life. That's what makes me feel like I'm doing a good job, more than having special letters after my name.
Mm-hmm.
I think this goes back to also making sure that the focus is on the person you're reading for, or the client, you know, being client focused, and making sure that you're not pretending to know what is best for this person, and instead fostering autonomy and empowerment and encouraging this person versus doing readings for self-fulfillment.
Yeah. And it made me also want to move towards this thought of like, what is intuition, you know, which is mm-hmm. kind of something you mm-hmm. touched on in a great, one of my favorite episodes you've done is magical thinking versus cognitive distortion. Because I think that's an amazing, you know, topic and something that mm-hmm. people grapple with in the magical community all the time. And it's even sort of like, does it really even matter if it's just because you're thinking like that the spell actually did it, or that you're just thinking about it? Like, does it even matter what's actually happening as long as something's happening, you know? But with intuition, that's another place where, you know, I'll hear sometimes teachers or readers say, you know, you have to listen to that intuition and the message, you know, comes through, and people say, I don't know why, but I feel like I should say this, you know, mm-hmm. and that sometimes that can be where the real gold comes, you know, because mm-hmm. you're just kind of leaning in and something will really come through, which I have definitely experienced as a reader. But at the same time, I've started to think, well, what if that's projection? I mean, what if that's like me, you know, it's because of course my intuition can only be coming from where I'm at, you know, mentally, or, you know, how much, like, you know, for instance, like with anti-racism work, you know, how much anti-racism work I've done mm-hmm. personally is going to like influence my intuition, you know? So, I mean, if either of you have any thoughts on that, I mean, just what is the filter through which, you know, we should maybe be processing some of that, do you think?
So in the therapy world, we give, it's called an interpretation. And I preface any sort of interpretation that I'm going to give with a client by saying, I'm about to give an interpretation. Mm-hmm. I might be totally wrong, And that's okay. I'm just going to throw it out there. And if you feel like that's a direction that we need to take, or that might actually be what's going on, let's talk about it. And if it's not, okay, we'll find another direction to go down. And I just realized it's very similar when a tarot reader is saying, does this resonate? So I think, again, we circle back to putting it on the client. You know, we should be, you know, kind of listening to our instincts and trusting ourselves. But at the end of the day, knowing that that might not be 100% accurate or 100% the truth of what's happening, and that's okay. I think it's all about respecting the other person and also respecting yourself, but not feeling like it has to be, you know, one way or the other.
You know, I love what you just said, by the way. Like, yes, yes, yes. I might echo that we were very lucky in that very early on in our program, we were given the message that it was okay to use your intuition. Like, we were trained that way. Mm-hmm. And we were trained from the point of view of there is science and there is art. So I've never held back in terms of leaning into intuition as a therapist. I think that this is why we call it a therapy practice rather than and something else, because I'm constantly practicing. But I think that this is very true for a tarot reader as well, that when I have a moment of inspiration, which happens frequently, like I'll have an idea pop into my head, or I'll sort of have a question and I'll be like, I have no idea where that question came from. Like, and it's just intuition is the way we would talk about it. I practice that. I am brave. And I'll put it out there gently, you know, carefully. I'll put all the pillows around it to make sure that it's not me telling. I'm not trying to like dictate thought. But what I learn is that my intuition is good, because when I say the thing that just popped in my head, often what I'll get is, I can't believe you just said that. And so when you hear that often enough, you start to trust your intuition, but you have to be brave enough to start listening and saying it out loud.
Yeah. And there's real science behind this. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, if you have a heightened intuition, you know, there's reasons why you do. And the truth is, you can pick up on things that someone who doesn't necessarily have a heightened intuition can't. Mm-hmm. And you're so right, Luna. I think honoring that is really important and really valuable.
Yeah. I love everything both of you just said. And something I hear kind of through it all as a through line is just maintaining your awareness that you're a human being, you know, like, because I think sometimes I think people want that when they come to tarot, you know, because there is that pop culture idea of like the tarot reader who's going to kind of tell you your future or like, you know, give you the answer basically. And I've definitely felt from clients sometimes a real need for me to give them the answer, you know, and I'm just like, that's just not what I do personally, you know, like, and I am a human. And I love, Shannon, what you said of just saying, I'm going to offer an interpretation right now, you know, like, and it's just my interpretation, and I'm a human, and yes, I have intuition, and I think I'm picking up on something right now, but I'm a human being, and I could be wrong.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And oh, it's so interesting what you just said, because it's not unlike what happens in therapy. Many people will come in and sit down on the couch and say, all right, you're going to fix me, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, no. You're going to do a lot of work though. And you know, it's going to be messy, but I don't have all the answers. I will do my best to guide you and be with you along the way. But there is that common theme, I think, that crosses both the tarot world and the therapy world of, please give me an answer. Please tell me what I'm supposed to do. And people are seeking out that kind of like instant gratification.
Are there any practical ways that either of you frame, because this has made me think about a big thing to address in all of this, is the framing that you give to a tarot client before they come into the reading so that they know what to expect, you know, so that it's very clear you're not going to give them answers and that isn't how you practice. I mean, are there any practical ways that either of you frame your tarot work to kind of make that clear? Because something I've thought about a lot in my own practice, you know, is, okay, I only have an hour with this person, whereas people that go to therapy go for, you know, a very long time. They go every week or every 2 weeks or however long, you know, for extended periods of time. And I'm not going to be able to address every single issue for this person in this hour, you know? So that's kind of something I've started to try to integrate into the way I frame, you know, readings before people come in. But what about either of you? Are there any specific language you use or any specific ways that you frame what someone can expect from a reading with you?
You know, Luna, I'm thinking about how we just work in the confines of the tarot diagnosis and in the symposium and just on Instagram. And I think what we tend to do is say, hey, this is not therapy, mm-hmm. you know, so we lay that, that foundation, but you know, we're not really reading for people. We're encouraging people to read for themselves mm-hmm. and we're the kind of the emotional support, the guide. And it's really about empowering other people. So letting them know you're in the driver's seat, however you need or want this to look, that's how it will look. And we do a lot of making sure people are respecting, you know, their own boundaries. And we talk a lot about boundaries actually, mm-hmm. and vulnerability and really just trusting themselves. So I think setting expectations is important. You know, I know like when we do our workshops, we're like, hey, you know, if you're going to talk about a card with us, we might only touch on it very briefly because we want to make sure we're talking to other people, but we also don't want to get stuck in that loop of, I'm going to interpret this card for you when we haven't really been able to sit down with that person individually and say, give all the kind of disclaimers. So I think for us, we mainly just say, hey, this is about you and this isn't therapy. That's just kind of like how we function.
You know, I think Shannon brings up such a good, I mean, like it's, we don't like, neither one of us are currently reading for other people, but like, actually, I think that there is something that we both do in our private therapy practices that we've talked about just through our own in conversations. And that is that therapists are not trained particularly well in how to do introductions. Like we're told right. how to do like informed consent, but we're not taught sort of almost like, forgive me for using this word, but like the business of how to be almost like a welcoming professional. And I mean, I've yeah. had conversations where I've sort of like called a therapist for myself or for one of my kids or whatever. And I'm just stunned by the lack of sort of like information that's being offered. So, I mean, I think that this is good information for anyone who is a therapist, a coach, a tarot reader, of thinking about what kind of experience do you want this person to have from the first moment they interact with you. Mm-hmm. And when I go into something, I want to know what I'm going to walk into. I want somebody to say, okay, look, this is what you can expect. This is what it's going to be like. This is what you might think, or this is what you might feel. I that's a huge part of my practice, is being really customer service oriented from the very beginning. And I think that just kind of cuts down on a lot of problems. There's no surprises when you come in as a therapy client with me. By the time you're in session with me the very first time, you've already spoken to me once, you know exactly what to expect, you've gotten several emails about it, and you've heard it from me personally. It's easy. And I think that that's the real expectation, that frankly, I think a lot of people in the magic community need that message sent, as well as a lot of people in the therapy community.
Oh, yeah, Luna, you're so right.
Yes, I totally agree. Yeah, well, thank you both for falling down so many deep rabbit holes with me in this conversation. I want to just close by letting you share how people can find you and your podcast, and if you want to share how they can work with you as a therapist, or maybe also your symposium. I bet a lot of people would be interested in. So anything you want to share about how people can connect with you? Maybe Luna, do you want to start?
Sure. Shannon's better at it than I am. you can find the tarot diagnosis primarily on Instagram, because that's where we sort of post the most. You can also find us at www.thetarotdiagnosis.com. And that's where you can find a link to the symposium. I'll let Shannon talk about that more. Me personally, you can find me on Instagram. I'm at Luna_thetarotdiagnosis. If you're interested in working with me therapeutically, I am licensed in the state of Maryland and only the state of Maryland. So I'm working with people therapeutically in the state of Maryland. So if you live in Maryland or you're a Maryland resident, please feel free to be in touch. You can just Google me and it's very easy to find me. Otherwise, find me in the tarot diagnosis.
Yeah, Definitely go to thetarotdiagnosis.com and then you can click symposium. You can learn more about our membership community. It's really fun. We have a ton of people in there who are new to tarot, who are seasoned tarot readers, and we have live monthly workshops. We just did a workshop on the pages and the inner child, and that was really, really fun and exciting. Yeah, we got some really great feedback about that. So we'll be diving into, you know, mental health related topics and using tarot to explore those. You can definitely find us on Instagram at the Tarot Diagnosis. We're on all major platforms. So Spotify, Apple, Audible, Anchor, wherever you get your podcasts, that's where you can find us. If you are interested in working with me from a therapeutic perspective, I'm only licensed in Florida, soon to be licensed in Arizona. You can find me at themoderncounselor.com and or Shannon_thetarotdiagnosis.
Amazing. And now that we've completed our conversation, Shannon, will you share what card you pulled before we hopped on today? Because now I'm curious if in retrospect, what we'll think about that.
Yeah. So people who follow us will laugh at this. I pulled the sun and they'll laugh because the sun is, I'm not team sun, I'm team moon. I have struggled with the sun for quite some time. I'm doing a lot of personal work around it right now. But I pulled the sun and then I ended up pulled another card as we started talking to you, and I pulled the Six of Cups, which I thought was very, very sweet. And makes perfect sense because Luna and I got to walk down memory lane forge a new connection with someone. So, yeah.
Amazing. I feel like we did shine some light on a lot of different things too with the sun, which sometimes is a little overwhelming, you know, sometimes that's a lot. So yeah, I have to say, I'm also not really super team sun. So I feel you, but.
I love that. And thank you so much for some really fantastic questions.
Some great questions.
Yeah. We super enjoyed our time with you.
Amazing. Likewise. Thank you for listening to In Search of Tarot. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl_, that's BIRDGERHL_, and you can follow me, Nick, at In Search of Tarot. This podcast is independently recorded, edited, and produced by us, which means that we rely solely on the generous support of our Patreon backers to make this podcast happen. If you'd like to lend us your support, you can do so for as little as $2 a month over on patreon.com/insearchoftarot.